from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Joshua Johnson, sitting in for Michael Krasny. It's killing sea lions, affecting our seafood, and changing the chemistry of the Pacific Ocean. A toxic algae bloom stretches along the entire West Coast, fueled by unusually warm water. What's being done to track and perhaps counteract this bloom? That's ahead in our first half hour. Then we shift gears to prescription drugs and the growing use of the powerful painkiller OxyContin. Recently, the FDA approved prescribing OxyContin to children as young as 11. We'll consider the impact of this change. The West Coast algae bloom and OxyContin for kids. It's all ahead, next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. Good morning. I'm Joshua Johnson of KQED News, sitting in for Michael Krasny. They call it the blob, a mass of warm water in the Pacific Ocean lingering much longer than usual. That blob is feeding a toxic algae bloom so large it stretches from the California coastline up to Alaska. The bloom is threatening marine life, including here in the Bay Area, and affecting our seafood supply. What does this mean for our environment? And can anything be done about it? Let's discuss it in this half hour of Forum. Joining us now is Rafael Cudella, a professor of ocean science at UC Santa Cruz. He leads a regional project that monitors the waters in Monterey Bay and Southern California. Professor Cudella, good morning.
Good morning, Joshua.
Also joining us is Vera Trainer of the Northwest Fisheries Science Center, a federal research lab based in Seattle. She is coordinating a survey of coastal algae blooms being tracked by scientists at sea. Vera Trainer, welcome.
Yes, thanks very much.
Rafael Cudella, let me start with you. Before we get into how things are, let's talk about how they should be. Now, algae are not inherently dangerous. They're part of the ecosystem. And even this algae bloom, as I understand it, is not in and of itself unusual. What does the bloom usually do around this time of year?
Yeah, you're exactly right. And so this is just a bloom of algae, and it feeds the base of the food chain. And so generally, algae are quite helpful. And at this time of year, normally what happens is we'll get a bloom like this with some toxin production, and it will last for maybe a few weeks. And then the weather conditions change, and it favors some other type of algae, and that algae will start to grow. And typically, those other algae are not producing toxin. And so normally, this is more of a transient event that's limited both in space and time.
So one algae to another algae, they feed they're part of the food chain, and then they go away.
That's exactly right.
What is it doing now that's different?
Well, what's been unusual this year is it started in about early May here in Central California, which is pretty typical. But what's been really different is it has lasted for months and months. And so the conditions are just perfect for it. And this algae just keeps growing and kind of coming and going. Sometimes it fades into the background, but then it comes right back and starts growing again. And it's producing much more toxin than we've ever seen before. And as you mentioned at the introduction, it seems to be essentially the same algae, the same bloom, has extended from Santa Barbara all the way up into Alaska. And that's something that is, at least in our recorded measurements, is unprecedented.
Now, these algae are putting off a toxic chemical called domoic acid. How does domoic acid harm living things?
So domoic acid is an amino acid, and so it's not something that changes the pH, and so it's not ocean acidification. And what it does is it interferes with your nervous system, essentially, if you're a vertebrate, and so a fish, a bird, a mammal, a human, and it attacks your nerves. And if you get enough of it, it can get into your bloodstream, cross into your brain, and then it causes damage in part of the brain called the hippocampus. And that's where we store memories. And so one of the names for this is sometimes we call it domoic acid poisoning, but a much more common name is amnesic shellfish poisoning, because enough of this toxin will actually give you permanent amnesia. And one way to get a big dose of that toxin is from eating shellfish that have concentrated that toxin.
Vera Trainer, let me shift over to you. What's the main concern in terms of how this algae bloom is affecting marine life in the Pacific?
Yeah, so it's relatively common that we see sea lion mortalities, sea lions having seizures, birds having problems flying into windows and being affected by this toxin. They feed on planktivorous fish like sardines, anchovies, and herring, and therefore get a big bolus of toxin and start having problems. The first ever sea lion with seizures that we have observed was found on the Washington coast this year, so the impacts appear to be spreading. I also heard from a colleague who was on a cruise in the Gulf of Alaska, and they were doing their sampling early one morning and had a big group of petrels on the ship that were flapping their wings and appeared to be ill, and they tried to release them and they came flying back into the windows of the ship. So, and this was in Gulf of Alaska, so the effects appear to be widespread throughout the food chain and to the higher levels of the food chain, which is disturbing.
I want to make sure I heard you right. You said that this was the first sea lion with seizures that you had ever seen on the Washington state coast?
Well, ever been observed. I mean, it's likely that offshore this is happening, that sea lions are having effects, but it was the first ever on the Washington coast observed to have this poisoning on Long Beach, and this was in May of this year.
And this bloom, just to confirm, this is a significantly larger bloom, not just a longer-lasting one, but larger significantly than what it would be on a typical year?
Yeah, as Raphael was mentioning, it appears to be very long-lasting. It is very highly toxic, and it is spread from California all the way to Alaska. It is somewhat patchy. It comes and goes, but it's not going away. And that's what is extremely unusual this year.
Raphael, what are you seeing in terms of how these algae are affecting our local waters in and around the Bay Area? I understand that high levels have turned up in Santa Cruz and in Monterey Bay. What impacts is that having locally?
We see a lot of the same impacts that Vera mentioned, and so there's been a peak in marine mammal strandings. California Department of Public Health earlier this summer closed the anchovy fishery. Sardines were already closed because the population is somewhat low this year, but if it hadn't been closed, they would have closed sardines as well. They've since closed the Dungeness fishery, and of course the shellfish fishery is closed for the summer. And so just in terms of economic impacts and impacts to people that consume those fish, it's already a pretty big deal. And then on top of that, you know, once it gets into the food web, we're seeing this toxin show up, starting with the anchovy, higher levels than we've ever seen before within the anchovy, and that's how it gets into pelicans and sea lions. But because the bloom is so long-lasting, we've actually started to see toxins show up at low levels, so not levels that would be of concern to humans, but certainly of concern to wildlife in things like rockfish and salmon and squid. And so because it's so long-lasting, this toxin is really starting to work its way into the food web.
And Vera, I understand that some of the fisheries in Washington state have been hit hard by this to the tune of millions of dollars in losses.
Yeah, that's correct. We have a large razor clam fishery that was closed in May. The problem with this toxin is it is not released from razor clams quickly. It's maintained in the flesh for a long period of time, many months. And so what we're seeing in Washington is the closure of a recreational razor clam fishery. So people go with their families, they dig on the beaches. But I think perhaps more concerning is that the tribal populations, the Quinault tribe, the Quileute tribe, and others are being affected. And this is a primary protein source for these folks who don't live close to a good grocery store. And also they have a small commercial fishery as well. So huge impacts to people who live in rather remote areas. That's concerning to us.
So this is affecting livelihoods and also cultural practices as well.
Absolutely.
We're discussing a large and toxic algae bloom affecting the West Coast with Rafael Cudella of UC Santa Cruz and Vera Trainer of the Northwest Fisheries Science Center. And we'd love to hear from you, too. We only have this topic until the bottom of the hour, so feel free to call in with your questions on this. The number is 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Email us. The address is forum@kqed.org. You can also find us on Facebook or tweet us. We are at KQED Forum. Vera Trainer, talk to us about this research mission out in the Pacific. I understand that there's a ship from NOAA, the federal agency that monitors the environment, that is watching this bloom up close. What is the research team trying to learn about this bloom?
Yeah, so this is on the research vessel Shimada. It's a National Marine Fisheries Service vessel that typically does sardine and hake surveys from the tip of California all the way to the northern tip of Vancouver Island, Canada. This cruise is it departed from Southern California. There will be four separate legs of this cruise. It is just coming in tomorrow, the end of the third leg, and departing for Canada in a couple of days. This is a perfect opportunity for us to look at concentrations of these cells, to look at relative levels of the toxins, and to compare these densities with environmental factors to really start getting at what triggered this bloom, what is causing this bloom, what is sustaining this bloom. So it's an important mission. We also have another cruise. It's an ocean acidification cruise that was in the Gulf of Alaska that was also collecting samples for us there. So we're hoping to put this big picture together in September when all of the ships are back to look at what environmental pressures may have caused this.
And I wonder if I don't know if you've been on any missions like this, but if I was on this vessel, would I experience anything different? Is this something that you can smell on the water? I imagine you can see it sitting on the water surface. Does it affect the way that a boat cuts through the waves? Does it make the water thicker? Like, is there a tangible or a tactile effect to this algae bloom that I might notice?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's very rare that this bloom is so dense that it's going to affect movement of a ship. You can see it in some places. We have seen it in Monterey Bay in areas where the water is quite quiet and there's not as much mixing. But out in the outer ocean, you really won't see very much. As blooms are decaying, there may be a slight smell, but again, this is very rare. You know, and as Rafael was mentioning, these cells are part of the natural part of the food chain. They provide over half of the world's oxygen, so there is some benefit to these organisms, too. What is very unusual this year, though, is that this is the primary organism. It's a huge number of just this cell at some places within the ocean, almost like a laboratory culture, which is not typical. So again, you don't typically see this. But, you know, the cruises do provide a perfect opportunity for us to study it.
Rafael, in terms of what's causing this, we had mentioned that the water in this part of the Pacific has been warmer than usual for longer than usual. How compelling, if at all, is the evidence to suggest that climate change is the culprit?
Well, it's certainly linked to the warm conditions, and what we've seen is this algae, it really likes sort of these unusually warm conditions with just a little bit of nutrients coming in, either from occasional northwest winds that drive upwelling or river flow that can bring nutrients in. And so what's been really unusual this year is that those exact conditions have lasted so long. And we actually saw the same conditions last year in Central California and thought we were seeing this really large bloom until we got to this year, and of course this has just dwarfed it. Whether it's linked to climate change or not, that's the question that we're really trying to address with these large cruises, where we can get a snapshot over the whole West Coast and look at what's going on. And there was a really nice paper that came out from Seattle Group just a little while ago, and Nick Bond was quoted as saying that, you know, we can't point to the warm blob and say that's climate change, but it's what we would expect climate change to look like. And so these warm conditions are exactly what we would predict if climate change is occurring, and we think it is. And so this is the type of bloom that might become more normal in the future, unfortunately.
Vera, I know we have to let you go shortly, but let me ask you before we do, what do we know, if anything, about how to counteract or reverse these blooms? Have we discovered any ways to undo what's been done, or do we just have to kind of wait it out?
Yeah, there are ways. NOAA has a program called Prevention, Control, and Mitigation of Harmful Algal Blooms. This program is relatively new. I would say this type of extremely large bloom will be really hard to control. But more patchy blooms, more localized blooms, there are methods that are being developed. We're looking at natural bacteria that may kill these algae that are found in the environment that are not foreign. We are looking at replanting of seagrasses that may contain these bacteria, living on them as a potential mitigation measure. Koreans use clays to spray on harmful algal blooms that occur in their water. So these are just a couple of examples of things that may help in the future.
All right, let's get to a few calls as soon as I say thank you to Vera Trainer of the Northwest Fisheries Science Center in Seattle. She's coordinating a survey of coastal algae blooms being tracked by scientists at sea. Vera Trainer, thanks for talking to us.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Let's get to the phones now, 866-733-6786, beginning with Ted in Mill Valley. Ted, good morning.
Good morning.
What's on your mind, Ted?
Thank you. I just have a brief question about being an abalone diver. How is this affecting abalone as for consumption by humans?
Good question, Ted. Raphael, any effects on abalone?
It's unlikely that it would affect the abalone, because the abalone are mostly eating kelp, and so they're not directly eating this algae. And so that's one of the organisms that we would expect very little toxin to show up in.
Let's continue on the phones with John in San Francisco. John, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I fish salmon, and all of this year we've seen a lot of anchovies in the salmon that we're catching. Is there a need to be concerned, because we're eating lots of salmon?
Yes, indeed. And John, just to clarify, you're a professional, a commercial salmon fisherman?
No, I'm a recreational fisherman, but we fish a lot and eat a lot of salmon.
Okay, good question, John. Raphael?
Yeah, so the toxin is water-soluble, which means it mostly doesn't get into the muscle. And so as long as you're cleaning the fish, you're probably getting rid of anything that would be dangerous. We have seen low levels of domoic acid within the salmon, but it's orders of magnitude below any level that would be harmful to humans.
So far it doesn't look like it's reached the point where we need to worry about buying freshly caught salmon, at least not yet.
You probably never need to worry about buying commercially caught fish, because all of the states have really good monitoring, and so that's why they closed the anchovy fishery, for example. And so any commercially sold fish is almost guaranteed to be completely safe.
Another listener asked us online, how is this different from a red tide?
Great question. And so a red tide, it refers to more typically a dinoflagellate bloom, which is another type of algae, and it gets its name because it discolors the water. And so this bloom, as Vera mentioned earlier, you can see it a little bit. It's sort of a greenish-brown color, but you won't get that really bright orange or red. And so we kind of group them together because they're both algal blooms that are often associated with things that we don't like, but this one doesn't discolor the water that way.
Another listener asks, are people who regularly swim in the ocean at risk?
No, not at all. It's the only way to actually get problems with this toxin is to consume a lot of it. And so that's only going to happen when you're consuming fish or shellfish that have consumed the toxin directly. And so we work with the water. We don't wear masks. We're not wearing gloves. It's perfectly safe.
Let's talk long-term for a second. Suppose that large, toxic, long-lasting algae blooms like this one become the new normal. Let's just say it is related to climate change. I know there's some evidence that the jury's a little bit out. Let's suppose that it is. Paint us a picture of what that might mean for us here in Northern California in terms of our environment, our fisheries, aspects of our quality of life. How might that go?
That's a great question. And so looking at this bloom in particular, things that we would expect to happen is we're going to have a big impact on the wildlife. And so this year there have been a lot of marine mammal strandings, there have been some bird strandings, and we would expect that to be the new normal, that it would have a large impact on these populations. And of course, people value those animals, and so that's going to be a negative impact. In California, we have a closure recreationally for shellfish that's roughly from May to October, both to protect people from domoic acid, but also from another toxin called saxitoxin. And if this, again, becomes the new normal, we might expect those closures to last longer so that you can no longer recreationally harvest shellfish, so that you can only buy commercial shellfish. So we're going to see those sort of ripple effects working their way through if these blooms become more and more common. It would certainly work its way into the food web, and so the price of fish and shellfish would go up because there would be more monitoring required, and of course that needs to be passed on to the consumer in order to cover those costs. And so it wouldn't, you know, we're not looking at a doomsday scenario, but it would make the wildlife would certainly be impacted, and people would notice it in their everyday lives because there would be more restrictions on harvesting fish and shellfish, and the prices would certainly go up.
Let's go back to the phones briefly before we run out of time at the bottom of the hour to Pat in Berkeley. Pat, good morning.
Hi, good morning, and thanks for having the show, because I'm planning to do a seafood buffet the next couple of weeks, and I'm wondering if I should avoid the shellfish, particularly the crab and the lobster that I usually indulge in.
You know, Pat, that's a good question, and Raphael, I know we just mentioned some of the shellfish supplies, but depending on where restaurants get their shellfish from, I wonder if that makes the risk higher, lower, or about the same.
It's pretty much the same, because all the shellfish that are sold in California, if you're buying it commercially again, they're being tested, and all those companies work with California Department of Public Health. The concern would be if you're going out and harvesting on your own, and there, as long as you're following the postings, and California Department of Public Health puts out postings for each region, if they tell you that it's safe, then it should be safe. But if there's a posting, they're really not joking. It's something that you should be following those regulations if they tell you that it's something that you shouldn't be harvesting yourself.
And presumably these restaurants are following certain state regulations that require it to do business with providers that have gone through this testing process, right?
That's exactly right. And so here in California, we don't know of anybody that's ever been hospitalized from this toxin because it's so well regulated. And that's not true in other parts of the world where the regulations are a little looser. But certainly California, Oregon, Washington, it's extremely well regulated, and as long as you're purchasing commercial products, you should be completely safe.
One last question briefly. One of our listeners wanted to ask about surfing on the coast. Does this affect whether or not we're actually able to just go in the water?
It doesn't. And in terms of water contact, what it does affect is, because these algae like these really warm conditions, oftentimes it's not the best surfing conditions anyway. But being exposed to the water won't do anything to you in terms of getting it swallowing some water by accident or breathing something in. It'll be just like a typical day in the ocean.
That's Professor Raphael Cudella of UC Santa Cruz. He leads a regional project that monitors the waters in Monterey Bay and Southern California. Professor Cudella, thanks for talking to us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Time now for a break. When we come back, we'll shift gears from algae to OxyContin. The federal government just approved the use of this powerful painkiller on children as young as 11. Does this put kids at risk, or might it actually make them safer? That's ahead. I'm Joshua Johnson. Glad to be with you. This is Forum from KQED Public Radio.